Yeah, and you're taking over this whole thing now?
Well, we just did some reorganizations, and I needed to take on a little bit more kind of active project management role for this project as part of that. So I think it's all going to be.
All right. So, Dan Savage, Tim Cudd, and that might do it. All right. Well, we'll just go on without them. Again, no one sent in any items of agenda, so I guess everyone's project is going very, very well. I just came back from Dan Savage's P20 review, and his is going very well, and they would like to interact more with CFAS. And so I think I'm going to have Dan kind of present either at the next conference call at our meeting in February about what they're have going on in Albuquerque in the basic sciences, and see whether or not there's any interest in doing some type of collaborative projects. The only other issue that I have, I think that we should probably talk about, is the renewal in the context of the possibility that NIAAA may go away and a new institute formed. And Michael, maybe you can fill us in on what's happening there.
So I'll sort of do a brief summary of information that is mostly in the public domain and then give you some impressions. The Scientific Management Review Board, which was chartered by the NIH Reauthorization Act to look at the structure of NIH, voted on the recommendations of the SUA, which was the Substance Use, Abuse, and Addiction subcommittee that was tasked at looking at a potential merger of NIDA and NIAAA. And the SUA had brought forth two options for consideration. Option one was for a structural merger, the dissolution of NIDA and NIAAA, and the formation of a new institute, scope not really well delineated, but might include both substance use, abuse, and addiction, based on discussion, but whose scope would be beyond that of addictive drugs and would include the nicotine portfolio from NCI, which is $300 million, as well as research on obesity and gambling and other things that would be considered by a committee that would look at the requirements for merger. And under that option, components of NIAAA's portfolio, which did not fit within any of those categories, would be assigned to other institutes, including the consideration of the FASD portfolio going to NICHD, and the liver portfolio going to NIDDK. Option two was for a functional reorganization, creating something of a health net opportunity network such as exists for neuroscience, but with more stringent requirements for success, involving, again, all of the institutes that do work in anything related to substance use, abuse, and addiction, and that there would be, I guess, more oversight and more accountability for the success of that program than exists now for the neuroscience network. There was an unusual discussion at the SMRB, which was dominated initially by Harold Varmus. Harold had, during his time as director, advocated for something like a reduction of the 27 institutes and centers at NIH to a total of 6. And he thought that this was a great idea to merge NIAAA and NIDA, and was something of a cheerleader for that, along with a couple of others. The final recommendation of the SUA to the SMRB, which formed the basis for this discussion, was actually a split vote of four members in favor of option one and four members in favor of option two. But there was something of a get on the bandwagon discussion that was promoted by Harold and some others that I think changed the dynamic of the meeting, and ultimately the SMRB voted 12-3 for option one. There were some procedural errors in how this all happened, in that it was a requirement that any institute that would be affected would be consulted before the vote. If you listen to the tape or the recording of this session, there wasn't even a clear resolution. They didn't really bring up option one. In retrospect, they agreed that they had voted for option one, but it was more or less moved just to merge NIAAA and NIDA, which was not one of the options proposed. And so I think the NIH staff are certainly feeling their way through this process because it's not been done before, but there were certainly some problems that are being pursued. I would say that the outcome was not necessarily what Building 1, the director's office, was looking for based on comments that were made or overheard at the time or made in private to others afterwards, but it places considerable pressure on the director, Francis Collins, because the margin of the vote was so large. There was one vote that wasn't counted for procedural reasons that would have made it 12-4, but I don't think that substantially changes the margin when viewed politically. There was an opportunity for comment. There were some heated exchanges, including Lyle Dennis, who was the lobbyist for the American Association for the Study of Liver Disease, which is a group about five times the size of RSA, that has been firmly against a merger, a structural merger, saying that he was going to go to Congress and Francis Collins would spend his term as director appearing before congressional committees and he'd make his life miserable. That was the gist of it. But there were strong feelings. RSA has been involved in several avenues of addressing this. The feedback that we're getting from Building 1 suggests that they are looking at how to do this rather than whether to do this. And the steps that have to be followed are not even clear in many people's minds because the Reauthorization Act wasn't really clear in setting up the process. But at the very least, what needs to happen is that Francis Collins needs to make a decision about whether to accept or modify the recommendations of the Scientific Management Review Board. That recommendation has to be accepted by Kathleen Sebelius, who is the Secretary for Health and Human Services. And at some point, which is not so clearly defined, there is a 180-day period during which there is a time for public comment and that the Congress can overturn the recommendation through a joint resolution of Congress. The feeling is that a joint resolution of Congress is a difficult thing to achieve because it takes just one person to kill it, especially in the Senate, where a person can put a hold on a piece of legislation. There are other legislative options that have been used in the past that are certainly under consideration, one of which is simply to defund a merger, to not vote funds for this to happen. That happened when there was consideration of merging NIOSH with NIEHS. Those are all, for the moment, areas of speculation. RSA has been working with many other organizations that are opposed to this, some of which are moving on their own, and there will be probably some efforts that occur jointly. If I were betting, I would bet that something will likely happen in the way of a dissolution for NIDA and NIAAA, but there are opportunities for intervention that are being explored.
All right. So is there anything that we should be doing?
I think at the moment, I would say not. In terms of, you know, congressional activity and letter writing and all the same, that is happening now. It's happening in a way that hopefully will be more powerful than many individual representations. Part of the challenge that we face is that the forces in favor of a merger, including Harold Varmus, have really characterized the response of the alcohol research community as somewhat self-serving, that they don't want their institute to go away. And so we are at a relative disadvantage with that characterization having been made, and I think to some extent accepted by some members of the SUA that we're just trying to preserve our grants, because that means that individual letters that might come, for example, from RSA members to Francis Collins might be perceived exactly that way. What I think might get more of his attention would be the communication or representations of groups that have interests that he would need to address, and those letters are being written and being sent now.
All right. So, would it be appropriate for CFAS to sign on to one of those letters?
I think as a grantee organization, it might not be, because CFAS is funded through NIAAA, and I don't know how compelling it would be to the NIH director that a group that's funded by NIAAA is saying this is a bad idea. FASDG is different because it more broadly represents the fetal alcohol research community, and they will probably send something.
Well, there seems to be, well, I have two questions. Is it a joint resolution that's required or a concurrent resolution?
I think it's a joint resolution.
Because that, I mean, there's a big difference between the two.
Right.
I don't think person can block the concurrent resolution.
Right. So I just make the point again. One person can block either, because you know, in the Senate particularly, one person can put a hold on a piece of legislation. But the reverse is true when it comes to defunding something. A single person can put a rider on a bill that blocks funding for a particular project. And that's why that approach proved to be successful for the NIOSH venture. I would say, you know, no one has heard Francis Collins really give his opinion on this, and I think he's been wise not to. But people who speak for him considered this to be an undesirable outcome and use stronger language than that. So he might not feel thwarted, or at least Building One might not feel thwarted if this unravels at a later stage of the process. But everybody has certain political constraints under which they act. And what may come forth from this may be the result of some of those political forces.
All right. Now, just another very naive question. It's my understanding that the secretary can dissolve the two institutes and then form a new institute, right? And then send that recommendation, not a recommendation, but send that on to Congress.
So the secretary can do that, and then Congress has 180 days to say otherwise.
But can they stop that from happening?
Yes, through joint resolution.
And then it would go back to the way it was. So it's her thing is, so she really doesn't have the power to create a new institute without the Congress not doing something.
Well, she can create what she wishes, but Congress funds it.
Right, but if let's say she dissolved the two institutes that currently exist and created a new institute, and then Congress decides not to fund the new institute, does that...
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if she can unilaterally dissolve an institute without Congress's approval.
You know, because one of the things that Terry Learman did suggest that seems to counter, to be in contrast to what you're suggesting, is that he thought that a letter-writing campaign would be appropriate and have an impact.
You know, I don't think it's a mistake to do. I'm not sure it's going to work, given what's happened. I wouldn't say don't do it. I don't think it will be harmful. I'm not sure it's going to help at the level of individually funded NIAAA investigators. That's really what I'm trying to say. So I'm not sure how it would be taken if CFAS sent something. If Francis Collins got 100 letters. See, one of the things that was commented on by the SUA, by the SMRB, and is going to be commented on in the press was that there were joint resolutions there were separate resolutions of NIDA and NIAAA's council that were unanimous for and against merger. And it was commented on also that the testimony from outside groups was strongly against merger throughout this SUA process and also now the SMRB process. So they already know. Francis Collins already knows that the alcohol research community is strongly against this. It's been so represented by a number of individuals who testified sometimes more than once before these groups, and also in letters that they've received, including from RSA. At least I would say 15 different RSA members have testified before these groups. Everybody's been opposed. So I've seen the discussion regarding Terry Learman's suggestion, and I don't think it's a mistake to do it, but I don't know how helpful it will be. I think that what may be more compelling is some of the organizations like NOFAS, MAD, the governor's spouses, some of the judicial groups, and so on. I think that their entreaties are a little bit different than the investigators because they are one step removed from appearing self-serving. They're not people who are looking to necessarily preserve a line of funding from the government. They're just ostensibly representing their constituencies, which are more grassroots. And I guess that's really the nuance that I'm speaking to.
All right. Does NIAAA staff have any comments about, you know, because CFAS, we're going to have an RFA out in the somewhat near future to, you know, in order to respond and get an application in for continued funding. Has there been any talk or?
Not much, but first of all, that was an excellent summary, Michael. From everything I've heard, that I have nothing to add to that. So in terms of CFAS, I think we're on a they're just loosely speaking, probably the applications would be due maybe at the end of 2011 for review in the spring of 2012. So, you know, that's pushing this out about, what, a year and a half. And I guess everyone expects nothing's going to happen, you know, immediately in terms of resolution and Francis Collins' decision and whatnot. This could take some time. But, you know, I suspect the process will be underway one way or the other, though much more, you know, in that year and a half.
Let me ask, has there been much discussion at NIAAA about center renewals?
I haven't been privy to anything of that nature. Ken is just sending us the message that this is a, and you know, reflecting what you've said, that there, this is going to be a process, and there are various points where, you know, decision can go one way or the other, congressional level, Sebelius level, Francis Collins first and foremost. No, we haven't gotten into that kind of discussion openly here.
Well, I think there's one other point that, well, it's probably several, but one that comes to my mind about the, at least CFAS, is that all the information that I hear is that it looks like there may be a new institute recommended. And if that does happen, the idea of moving the FAS portfolio to NICHD is not necessarily, does not necessarily have to be part of that. And is there anything that we could do in order to try to strengthen and keep the FASD portfolio within a new institute, that if that should come out of it? I mean, I have very strong feelings that some of the success in the FASD field is directly related to the involvement of NIAAA. And, you know, I've put together a number of points of what NIAAA has been involved in. And I would hate to see that just go away. And I think if it went to some new institute, FASD would fall down, way down the list in priority.
So, Ed, one of the processes that will be part of this, if it actually comes to pass, is that there will be committees that have to examine the potential scope and mission and even name of a new institute. And one of the things that's already under active discussion is how to get alcohol research well represented in that process. You know, if it comes to it and they go so far as forming those committees, which I suspect that they would do even during the period of public comment, because it's going to take a long time to sort this out. There are some very mundane decisions that have to be made, such as how do you handle the centiles and funding lines from two different institutes that have different, that map them differently? And how do you integrate the last study section scores into centiles that are coming in to an institute that doesn't exist or that is now integrated with another one? There are many, many details that have to be worked out, and the actual decision about what would be within the portfolio of a new institute hasn't been made. They've really, if the recommendation carries through, only recommended a merger and the creation of a new institute, but its domain hasn't been really well delineated, and that's something that would require a lot of committees and a lot of input, both from within NIH and from the scientific community. So I think there is an opportunity for that opinion to be expressed. You know, how they react to it is unclear. Whether, you know, the effects on development of other drugs of abuse might be studied within that same institute, or all of them sent off to another institute like NICHD. Those are decisions that haven't been made, and the recommendations were really very vague, and in fact the motion was so vague as to make the vote almost questionable.
All right, are there any other comments on the merger or creation of a new institute? Okay. All right, so we'll go back to CFAS here, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it all plays out, and just go from there. Any comments on various projects, updates? I think it's critical that we try to get our data out these days to show the value of CFAS in the future. So, Feng Zhao, you have any new exciting things to report?
Oh, this mostly just ongoing. We are heavily analyzing the bond by the micro CT, and we have get the surface recently also by the micro CT also constructed for a few examples. So we were trying to see what the relationship of the bone underneath the surface can be correlated in terms of the analysis. Other than that, we are working on two papers in this area, and that's what we're working on so far.
Okay. Kathy?
I guess a sort of new thing that is exciting with what we're doing is that we've been letting a lot of the mice go to term and beyond, so we're starting to do behavior studies in them as part of our challenge grant. And what we're noticing and confirming from studies a long time ago is that a number of these day 7 alcohol-exposed animals are becoming hydrocephalic, and which is pretty cool to think about, that you can make major hydrocephaly. With the MRI, we saw aqueductal stenosis, and that's what you would predict would happen, is that they would become hydrocephalic. But anyway, so it's opening up a whole new avenue for us. There's really, I don't think, much good recent research on the developmental basis for hydrocephaly. So I think that we will be able to get at least one nice little study out of following up on hydrocephalus. So that's what we're excited about today.
Okay, and Tim's not on.
Kathy, sorry to interrupt. Could you put that in perspective for me? Is that a common outcome in children?
Well, hydrocephalus is quite common in children. It's typically picked up in utero in people, and then surgeons go to all kinds of heroic measures to do shunts and all sorts of things. I don't know that it's been, I mean, ventricular enlargement is certainly part of what we recognize as fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, but hydrocephalus itself has not, I think, been classically considered to be part of FASD. But
there have been some case reports of hydrocephaly, but it's not generally seen in the list of symptoms.
But just like seizures, I think if your animal model can show you that it's definitely a result of alcohol exposure, then I think that we have a chance for the clinicians that see hydrocephalic kids or see seizure kids, to start at getting better maternal histories.
I just mentioned for fun that one of the syndromes of the L1 gene mutations is aqueductal stenosis and hydrocephalus.
Right. Yeah, that's very exciting. And that, along with agenesis of the corpus, and we should be looking more for what L1 is doing on day 7 of gestation, but it's so early that it's hard to sort that out, you know, to do any specific L1 labeling at that point in time, but needs to be done.
So. Anything coming from the Peter Hammond?
Peter has been talking a lot with Rob. Right now he's in Chile doing a little, I think, a cleft lip type of adventure in Chile and looking at some other craniofacial abnormalities. But he's engaged in what we're doing. He's just diverted for the moment.
Okay. Well, I mean, because I have a considerable investment there, and it's going to run out. And, I'm hoping to get as much from that as possible while the money's still there.
Right. So I did ask him if he thought he might make it to our January or February now, first week in February meeting, and I think he wants to come. I think it would be really important to have him there. So do you know if Jill has been keeping him informed of that meeting?
I will make sure, Jill, to put that on the calendar. I tried to get him to come to the Vancouver meeting, but he had to be in Chile the week after that.
Yeah.
He just didn't want to come over twice.
Right.
So, I mean, we both agreed that it was, kind of silly to make him
make
the trip twice.
I think with the D.C. meeting, it would be like we talked to him about him coming to that and then maybe making a little side trip to Chapel Hill.
Okay.
So we could work with him directly.
All right. Jill, can you get in touch with Peter and see if that can be arranged?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I don't think Tim is on the phone. So... Michael, did you get the information about the Vancouver meeting?
I got some stuff. I signed up for whatever I was supposed to do.
Okay, good. I just wanted to check on that.
Yeah.
Jennifer's not on, but I understand that she gave a talk yesterday at the 40th anniversary meeting of NIAAA.
And, she did indeed. It was great.
I heard it went very, very well. So CFAS was represented there in a little bit. I know there was at least one CFAS slide in there, and some of the data that has been collected at CFAS were presented. So I was going to thank her for that, but all my reports was that it went very well and that the whole meeting went very well.
Yes, it really was a nice meeting, and her talk was particularly nice. Great overview.
Okay. And I know
CFAS was also represented at the ISBRA meeting in Paris. There was a symposium from the Basic Science Group.
Yeah. And again, that was I thought the talks went very well, I was pleased with that outcome. I understand that congratulations are due to Dr. Hannigan, who is now the associate director. Deputy Director of the Merrill Palmer Institute at Wayne State.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Merrill Palmer goes back a long way, and it's quite a well-known entity. And do they still publish that series?
The Merrill Palmer Quarterly is still out there. I think it has an impact factor that you have to express in scientific notation with negative numbers.
It used to be a very high-quality series. So under the leadership of the new deputy director, I'm sure that great things will start happening at Merrill Palmer. So, all right, any other comments?
This is Jill. I did get an email from Dr. Miranda that he's teaching this morning, so he apologized for not being able to be on the call.
Do we have to rearrange this for his schedule?
Possibly.
All right, let's see if we can work on that as well. All right, in terms of the clinical projects, I have really nothing to report. I heard Claudia Teshi give a summary when I was in Albuquerque of what they have going on there, and she's managed to make, I think, about 12 kids so far. And it looks like there's potentially some interesting data there. Sarah's profile paper has come out. We have the CFAS was given supplemental funding for a GWAS study, although I think there's still some questions that are going back and forth between NIAAA and Tatiana about that. I have a meeting on Wednesday with Ken Jones and Tina to discuss the dysmorphology core and the potential for an additional project in North Korea or South Korea. And that's kind of an update on what's going on in the clinical realm. So, Any other thoughts, NIAAA thoughts, or Science Advisory Board, John? Bill or Dale?
I just wanted to ask Michael. It seems that the notion that any letter that comes from somebody who's got funding from NIAAA is a self-serving letter seems to be cutting off at the knees any opportunity to try to have an impact on the process. I wonder, is there some way to couch a letter or an introduction that could get around? It seems the environment has sort of tilted the playing field, and there's no way to get a running start.
Well, you know, I'll just reiterate what I said. I think that letters are not going to hurt, but it has been expressed and written that the alcohol research community is concerned about its funding, and that colors their approach to merger and maybe makes the alcohol research community resistant to the idea of merger. And that's been said to Dr. Collins and by members of the SMRB and others as well in interviews.
And so the investigators at NIDA are not concerned about their funding?
Well, I think that, you know, they're arguing for merger, so they're being cast as the people who are willing to take risks with their funding for something better to happen. We're being cast as the sort of conservative group who wants to keep things the way they are, even if there are opportunities to do this better through a different structure. And that's a bit of a tough nut to crack at the level of individual investigators. As I said, I don't discourage people from sending letters, but I think it's very important for letters to reach the director that are not from people who are directly receiving funds from NIAAA and represent a broader constituency. And that's really where a lot of the effort is going right now.
Yeah, I mean, in that regard, I kind of drafted up those talking points about FASD, and presumably they were sent out to the parent groups.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that it's just so much more powerful for government to hear from constituents, because they're voters, they're people who have less of a dog in the fight, at least directly in a funded dog. I think that they listen more when they hear that. I would say that during the SUA process, among all of the investigators who spoke, some of those who were listened to most intently were the young investigators who talked about the potential loss of opportunity in the field and their interest in pursuing careers in the field. I'd say there's a hierarchy in terms of who is credible and probably least credible are people who have been receiving NIAAA funding for a long time. More credible are young investigators, and probably most credible are people who speak to the public health concerns as representatives of groups who have identified those concerns to be central to their mission.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
But I don't know. I still feel that scientists who've been working in this field for a long time can certainly address the public health issue as well. You know, all the talks at the SUA, were a lot of them anyway, were by scientists. And I don't think they were viewed as being self-serving. And I think they were viewed as, here's what we think is going to happen if you do this.
I agree that no one can speak better to the public health concerns as they're studied as the scientists who study them. I just would draw a distinction that in addition to that representation, which has been ongoing for a year and a half, there has to be representation by the groups who really experience the public health consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think together they make a more compelling argument
than the scientists representing those groups. I think, and you know, it's not to say the groups haven't been there. NOFAS has testified several times and is active now in seeking other remedies for a possible merger. I guess everybody has something to say, and it doesn't hurt to say it. But some people's views will be listened to more intently at this stage of the discussion, because in a sense, the scientific discussion was really the focus of the SUA, and that part of this process has come to an end.
And I notice on all the blogs, there's very little being said in favor of not merging. You know, there's a few things out there that, and all of them say, I think, like one said, it was a no-brainer.
Right, we've heard that before. A done deal is the other expression that's still out there, and that Nora has expressed as recently as this week, and her comments about, you know, how good this is going to be. She and I think NIDA have been beating that drum for a long, long time. One could argue that it was a successful political strategy to convey the notion that this was a done deal, because we know that at least in certain organizations, including American Psychiatric Association, there was concern about not being on board, given that this was a done deal. And that's all been conveyed. Those concerns have been conveyed also to Francis Collins and to the SUA, who have heard those concerns expressed.
All right. Well, unless there's any other business, we'll talk in a month. Jill will be working on a meeting plan, and we'll get
Dr.
that.
Riley?
Yep.
Regarding the meeting, had we determined whether or not we were going to for sure do a two-day or three-day format, and if so, which 2 and 3 days those were? There was still talk about talking with PASS and trying to decide if there was a good overlap day.
Right, and I'm waiting to hear from Hannah Kinney about whether or not the NIHD is going to be attending the PASS meeting. And that seems to determine whether we're going to be able to interact or not. So we'll know soon, but if it's a two-day meeting, it's going to be the 2 days prior to the PASS meeting, so it'll be Tuesday and Wednesday.
I think, Ed,
yep,
that if, in fact, the merger happens and the FASD stuff gets overtaken by NICHD, that the potential of PASS and our consortium to sort of become one underneath the NICHD umbrella is a potential way of assuring our continued existence. And I don't know if you have thought about that or talked to the PASS people about it at all or not, but I'm wondering if, in fact, ensuring that we meet together as a group in case that discussion could come up or would come up or be encouraged to come up, we would, you know, it would facilitate that. Is that something that you've thought about?
Well, in fact, it's kind of ironic that the PASS people would indeed like to meet with us unless the NICHD director decides to come to the PASS meeting.
Oh.
And then they do not want to meet with us.
That's crazy.
Uh-huh. So, you know, NICHD has primarily been interested in this from the sudden infant death side.
Right.
They have not been all that excited about studying the kids past year one, because then they wouldn't be sudden infant death anymore. So I'm not quite sure how excited they are about you know, pursuing this. They believe that the National Children's Study is answering the question about the effects of alcohol. I'm trying to find out the alcohol questions in the National Children's Study. From what Claire Cole told me, that they're not all that involved and exciting?
They're terrible. There's really only one question.
So, you know, I'm not quite sure. Right now, the only FAS projects that they are involved in are the PATH project, and then they fund a study by James Mills in Chile. And Jim Mills is an NICHD investigator.
Yeah, but don't you think that's because we have NIAAA? So they're just not, you know, not stepping on that territory. But if NIAAA, as we know it, won't be there anymore, I would think it would be a wonderful time to encourage the NICHD people to be there to see what we do.
I agree. I mean, I think it'd be try to work in some relationships with NICHD. Although, and Michael may be able to speak to this, there's never been anything stopping NICHD from getting involved in the FAS field in terms of joint funding or things like that. And I don't know whether or not that's ever been proposed to them or not. Maybe Dale, do you have any?
Well, yeah, I don't know the whole history. I do know a couple things. One, there is a lot of talk within PASS about being able to continue to follow the kids past a year, but it's just not the mandate of what has been funded, and they haven't been able to, you know, figure out how they'll be able to keep the cohort together to address questions related to FASD, for example. The other thing I would mention is that, yeah, I do. I think Kathy's got a good point. I think a lot of FASD stuff, because alcohol is so central, CSR just would send it our way. Now it doesn't stand in the way of NICHD, as you said, co-funding and being more active in funding the portfolio in that way. And related to that, they have just now, from this point forward, are co-funding the FASD study group. So you know, that's an indication that they're paying attention to this issue. And one last thing is that the division director that oversees the PASS network is Kathy Spong. Some of you may know of Kathy, who's contributed quite a bit to the FASD field with her studies on NAP and SAL. So, you know, things to keep in mind.
All right.
Well, and I think that the PASS thing, I don't think they haven't had any basic science in that, really.
That's correct.
And I think that they could benefit from that. And so I would see that as sort of a natural extension from what we're doing, is to, you know, they're trying to see if kids are dying from SIDS if they're exposed to alcohol, but to understand why alcohol does that is hugely important. And I don't know that there's any concerted effort to accomplish that, and our consortium can do that.
Let me get back in touch with Hannah then, and at the very least kind of insist that even if the NICHD director is there, that I be invited.
Right. Well, I think
Dale,
they...
Do you know anything more about that? Do you know if she's going to be there or not?
The new director of NICHD, and I'm blanking on his name, maybe someone on the call knows. But yeah, they've had an acting director like us until recently, and now they have a person who they're all excited about, but I'm blanking on his name, and I'm sorry about that. But both Bill and I are involved in the PATH network as well. So what I took away, they discussed whether or not to invite the NICHD director, and I thought they ended up leaning in that direction, that it would be good for them. They would have already submitted their renewal, and it would be good for them to show off their stuff to the NICHD director at that critical point prior to funding decisions. I think it would be great for him also to gain an awareness of what CFAS is doing, not knowing where things will go in the coming year or two with the merger. But, you know, I could understand if you know, time might be very limited for everyone involved. So,
do you think it's worth at this stage for CFAS to invite him, or is that just too politically?
I would bring that up with Ken.
Yeah,
I think it might seem a little short.
It would seem smarter, from my perspective, to merge our meetings and then have that director there just sort of by coincidence.
Yeah,
to see what we're doing.
Yeah. All right. Let me get in touch with Hannah and get her input on this and see. She was in South Africa until maybe 2 weeks ago. So
I could see how that might CAS might be wanting to make a very clear statement to the NICHD director, you know, prior to their funding decision, and I could see how maybe they might not see that in their near-term interest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just a thought.
But another person from NICHD that should be very sympathetic towards FASD stuff is Jim Hansen.
Yeah.
And
brought that up, and, we're not sure. So.
Okay.
All right. So, I'll talk to Hannah and see, get her input into this. All right.
One last thing I was going to add. It's a change of topic, but you know, the leaves are starting to change colors. We're having 50 degree weather here, so that tells me that deadline for our RSA symposia is just a couple and a half months away. Probably not too early to be thinking about symposia.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I just throw that out.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time we have our next phone call, it will be what a month. The date will be about a month. It's usually mid-December, isn't it?
Yes.
So anyway, that it's going to come up pretty quickly.
Jill, could you put that on my agenda? Hello, Jill? She must be muted or something. All righty. Well, thank you one and all, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.